Oh, that was pretty quick. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our once again regular Wednesday stream.
Yes, good evening, folks.
It is still Hyper Super Guest Week.
Yes, indeed.
it's not actually called that. And we are joined by the people from the Longhouse, if you want to say hello, Ludwig Path and a Walrus.
Oh. Me first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah, I jumped the gun here. Yeah, I mean, I guess some people know me already. I'm the co-host on the Longhouse show. I'm also the editor-in-chief of praxarchy.com. I guess in these spheres, that's where people know me. So I'm happy to be on here. So, I mean, I think we were at the same Shieldings event in Birmingham this
indeed
autumn.
We were.
We didn't speak, but... I mean, at least we were in proximity, so...
In the room?
Yeah. Yes.
Are the Longhouse people in the room with you?
Right. Yes, they are. Oh, they're in the virtual room with us right now, okay?
I'm sure they are. Well, are you telling me one of these people is a talking walrus?
You tell me a walrus made that stream?
Yeah.
That's good lead-in. How are you doing, Mr. Walrus?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking, and thank you for having me on. As Ludwig said, I do also remember us as meeting at the event, although we didn't talk. I think there were so many people there, but I did remember, of course, Evelyn's wonderful presentation, and of course the wonderful tagline that came out of the Q&A of that.
Appreciated for that.
Yes, we do want to win. We do. Oh, speaking of, tell you what, I'll do some proper shilling then. We do have their links all down below. That is your YouTube channel up on screen there, A Walrus. You do the Longhouse podcast together. Generally, is that a weekly thing or
every Thursday evening? Yes, that would be probably 7 p.m. same time as you guys here on Thursdays. We do the Longhouse, which is, well, it's always been a bit of a variety show, but it's gotten a bit more focused over the new years. We usually try to bring on a bit more guests and talk about things they've written, ideas they have, or we review books, etc., etc. And the tagline for the show at this point is to be the NPR for the sensible centrist. So if you want something that is, you know, a bit more calming, but still, you know, in depth, you can come check out that every Thursday.
I do appreciate the format. That's kind of why I invited you guys on. I've also, you could be found on Twitter. You both have the Twitters for now. We all just kind of have the Twitters for now. So that's
just for now. I have posted some stuff that I was a bit afraid would land me in hot water, but not yet. But yeah, you can follow me there for generally more, you know, shitposty stuff, but sometimes I do engage in sort of like idea sparring or testing out, you know, concepts.
It's okay. You can see you own the libs here.
Yeah, and that is Praxarchy. I forgot to put that on stream earlier, so go and visit them there. Like I said, all those nice...
I feel like I'm being shamed now because I was meant to write more stuff for there. And I did that one Carlisle piece that got semi-popular and I've never returned. My sincerest apologies.
You're just busy. We can barely get our own Substack going.
That's true.
You're welcome back anytime, Evelyn.
No, I know.
Which brings us to our own shilling. We have a couple of our Substack pieces we're going over today, but there was one put out yesterday called The Skull Collapse. People seem to be quite liking. If you guys aren't aware yet, antipolitics.substack.com is where you put our writing. We are also still somehow monetized. So if you guys want to send us any tips, you can do so via YouTube, or I keep promising to. I still haven't set up the StreamYard entropy stuff.
I'm sure Ludwig Path and Walrus will join us in our usual recognition of our deep love for the nation and legitimacy of Israel.
That's how we stay on air. That's
yeah.
our deep commitment is the only way we stay on YouTube. But the way to do it, to send us questions, if you don't want YouTube to take a cut, is just via PayPal, really. And I keep an eye on that. It basically emails me when you stuff gets sent through, so I will not miss those. We have memberships as well, which is the best way to support us monthly, and always interaction, you know, all of you
do
know
the, rate, do the algorithm leave, summoning.
Yeah, leave a video, leave a video reply. Don't forget to rate 5 stars and join our circles on Google Plus.
Yeah, follow our Bebo page and whatnot.
Give us some digs. You remember dig?
Sub for sub.
Sub for sub.
Right, no, let's stop that now.
Let's stop that now. No, when I approached you guys, I kind of had the loose framing of doing a bit more of a kind of practical ideas to move forward stream. And a jumping off point I was using was an article here by a friend of the channel, Pete Quinones.
Whose show I was only on the other evening, of course.
Yes, yes. We must always endeavor not to call him Mr. Quiznos.
But yeah, no, never do that.
No, don't do that. Only villains do that. I'm not going to go through it in too much detail. I will probably link it in the show notes, but it's a piece about really kind of a commitment to yourself and the idea that it really is the only way to start is to start by kind of looking inwards. It's not like clean your room, Jordan Peterson stuff.
It's a bit more serious and respectful. He's not expecting you to be an idiot. He's more just saying that, you know, to some extent, if you aren't an exceptional person in a very obvious manner, that putting an exceptional effort is sometimes the best you're going to get. And it's partly, I think, you know, comes down to the sort of image we try and portray it with the Nomos stuff, which is always focusing on having people bring the best versions of themselves there.
Yes.
And that doesn't just mean showing up and, you know, wearing a nice suit and everything. I think it's, you know, it's almost like a whole preparation process. You are thinking about the entire person you would like to be, bringing that there, and then attempting to reflect that back through everything else you do in the world.
Well, the piece is called The First Place to Start Change. It's First Place to Start Change to... Ah, I can't reach today. The First Place to Start to Change This Hellscape. Fourth time lucky there. And
I
just
found
kind
it
of
interesting reading this article, thinking back to a lot of the early videos I did when I started my channels, which was these, you know, video essay type things that they were pretty much going out of style by the time I was doing them anyway. But a lot of the core message is the same as this article or this piece by Quinones. It's not the Jordan Peterson clean your room stuff, as you said. It's more, you know, focus on your local community and how you can, you know, influence that and build from there.
It's a good starting point. To read a little bit here, it says, not only is taking care of yourself the first step in getting through these turbulent times, as stated above, it's also the first step in the process of changing the culture in which we live. When you take care of yourself, by default, you take care of your family, which, if more people follow suit, leads to vastly improved morale in our society, which breeds less dependence on government, making it all the more irrelevant in the minds of people. It's just... A lot of people are like, duh, well, that's really basic advice. But I find that a lot of the basics aren't covered properly in these circles. And I don't want to make this kind of a self-help stream. We'll be kind of moving on from the point. But it really is something to bear in mind that if you don't feel you have the energy to properly look after yourself, you're not obligated. A lot of people I get messages from asking, you know, I'd love to help, I'd love to donate, but X situation, Y situation, really the best thing a lot of people can do is get themselves into a place where they can help the people around them.
Yes.
That's a exactly. Big, yeah. It's a big point we always make with our kind of no more stuff. But I just wanted to ask you guys some things quickly. Like, Lytic Path, how did you end up kind of in these circles and starting things like Prax Archie? And like, how did you end up where we are, basically?
Yeah, I mean, it really, for me, it goes back to the 2020 election. I mean, there's been many, you know, small red pills along the way, basically all the way from back to Gamergate, to the migrant crisis, to, I mean, we go through the standard kind of bologna sandwich of all of the stuff that if you're a person who has pattern recognition skills and you know this stuff, you get annoyed. But I think like the Trump was kind of the last straw where you realize that, okay, that's there's not going to be anybody, you know, no more copium, basically. Nobody's going to come and like fix the problem. So one has to get involved on some level, right, and figure out something that can be done and start actually looking at the problem seriously instead of just going into the voting booth. So that's kind of how it started for me.
All right. Same question to you, Monsieur Walrus. How did you end up in these peculiar places we find ourselves?
I'm sure he started with some fish at some point.
I'll bite and go through that bologna sandwich for a bit. I suppose it started slightly with the, was it 2012 election, that the Mitt Romney Obama year? Does anyone remember?
I remember Mitt Romney.
Okay, yeah.
Bind us
okay, so it is 2012. Okay, yeah. When I started making sort of connections to, hang on a minute, this Mitt Romney guy isn't really as bad as they're trying to tell me. And then Gamergate happened, and at the time I was following this Sargon guy who was working on some video games, and that turned out to still waiting on Necromancer, by the way. So I followed Sargon for a while and got really into sort of the anti-feminism stuff early on. Used that sort of as a platform into libertarianism through economics, which I was doing classes on at the time. Always had an interest for economics. And through economics, I found a channel called Academic Agent with a guy, you know, making economics videos.
Nina Pavarotti.
Yes. It's been all been downhill from there, isn't that the saying? I've sort of been shadowing a type of political movement that I think a lot of people in the sphere have following these communities, I guess.
Well, it's a movement that kind of is still coalescing, as it were. It's something definitely within its infancy, and I think that's why it's important to have kind of organized discussions. I've been made aware, and I've been kind of watching the stuff that you guys have done for a few months now, really, kind of on and off. I know you did the writing for Praxarchy, and there is like a rough kind of rotation and sphere of people, some of which people have been surprised by. I know people are quite surprised when you got Millennial Woes on. That felt like a left-field thing. Some people were even surprised on Monday when we had Semiogog on. They didn't realize.
Don't realize how far the tendrils of my connections go, do they?
I think it's very important, though, to kind of have this sense of community, as it were. That's the outgrowth of once you get into a space where you feel that you can put yourself out there a bit more and you can communicate these ideas, is to kind of form it into more of a place to be. Like I said, I appreciate the effort and the work put in with Praxarchy and things like that.
The whole idea behind sort of starting the Longhouse or the Scandinavian Roundtable, as the working title was for us, was to try to, you know, make something reminiscent of what unpopular opinions have been for the British and to some extent the American community, but of course a bit more focused on the Nordic and Germanic tribes, I guess. And then that has evolved into, you know, what it is today, but I still appreciate the community building we are doing, and the goal is and always will be to be able to do things in real life.
Well, it's interesting
using this as a vehicle.
That both of you kind of come from more of the, I guess, European school of things, because it's an area that doesn't get a lot of attention. It feels a little bit disconnected. There's a couple of people we speak to who are kind of on the continent, but there really is this, there's this hyper-focus on America.
I would actually say the hyper-focus is more on basically the Anglo world, but not Australia.
Yeah, well, it is. It's the hyper-focus on America, and then kind of Britain takes a secondary role, and the West is really just seen as Britain plus America, and then everyone else on like a weird lower tier in terms of the cultural... especially when it comes to quote-unquote, you know, sensible centrist or distant right, whatever you want to call it, that kind of stuff is all very much based in the UK or the US in many places, and that it's much better to have kind of a more diffuse group of people who can go into their own communities, and you end up finding allies and vectors you don't think you normally would. How does politics differ kind of in continental Europe than how it does in like the British sphere? Like what does work and what doesn't work in comparison, in kind of your opinions?
I can mostly only speak for the Nordics. I don't really, you know, pay attention to what's happening on the ground in France. Maybe Ludic Path does. But we have talked about these sorts of topics on our streams, and you get this weird phenomenon where there are some things of the sort of like reality denying aspects of the empire that we just aren't on board with. We just don't practice that part of the religion. We just don't talk about it. It just doesn't engage. And then you have other topics where we sort of overcompensate by signaling to, you know, the heart of the empire that, hey, we're still loyal guys. And we're going to show that by going really hard on this specific thing.
Well, I think politics in Scandinavia is still quite boring compared to, especially the US, which, I mean, from the Scandinavian perspective, it's seen very much as a sort of like we're on a much kind of higher, matured level than they are. But I've argued this on the street many times that it's actually like we're way behind them. Like the American politics and the, you know, Nathan Hood has talked about chimpanzee politics, like this sort of approach to hyper realism, Hollywood politics, this kind of like monkey brain style of American politics. Like this is like the next level of sort of political innovation, in my view. And we're kind of just a little bit behind the curve. Mm-hmm. it's really not us being mature at all. It's just like having to kind of, okay, we had to, what's the next step? What's the logical next step for politics the way, with the demographics and so on?
Well, no, you very much get that in the UK from hearing you're right. I did have to go and close the window there, but I think I've roughly got an idea what you're suggesting is that the style of political engagement in America is a technical development over and above, say, what we would recognise in Britain as like the modern parliamentary kind of discourse, I suppose, that we were used to.
Mm-hmm.
Now so inundated with media messaging to the point whereby the whole thing is actually very hard to disconnect from the media complex. Yes. And I would imagine that's maybe less so the case where you guys are, but it's probably clear to identify that it's becoming more the case as time goes on.
Yeah, well, it's ramping up, but I mean, if anything, we're at the beginning stages of it. We're nowhere near Britain at this point, and certainly nowhere near America. Mm-hmm. But it's a scary thing because you see where America is heading. And as you said, Lodic Path, maybe that's sort of the next logical step, but is that a step we want to take?
Right? No, but what it does do though is it puts people like yourself in a position of preparedness. You know, you've seen how it's gone down in America. You're seeing how it's currently being played out in Britain. If you guys have got another 5-8 years before, you know, your media isn't totally dominated with political messaging and virtue signaling and wokeism or whatever we want to call it over here, you know, you've got time to prepare and time to make sure that
there's a lot more room to maneuver for sure.
Not just necessarily to combat it so much, but to make sure that there are alternative sources of media and culture that exist before everything gets woke-washed.
I mean, just adding in another point, I do feel like the sort of the Scandinavian sphere has a particular style of containment when it comes to media, and it's not really like this kind of hyper-focused, woke or polarized media messaging, but it's really more in the idea that all of the ideas that are being enacted within Scandinavian, let's say Norwegian, Swedish politics, is something that's being kind of generated by consensus inside of these parliaments and by the local bureaucracies. So everything is being presented as if like this conclusion that we reached about the new legislation about surveillance, data security, immigration, and so on, this is something that we came up with. In reality, it's because like they're either beholden to people in the UN, let's say in the EU, whether it would be the World Economic Forum, like the slave masters in the United States and so on. Like if you zoom out a little bit, you can see that there's a much greater international influence on everything that's being done that can sort of explain a very, very large part of what's actually being enacted. But it's always being presented as like, this is just something we arrived at. And, you know, we're keeping the discussion here. You know, it's only about us and our little world and our small politicians. And we're having this discussion, yet the ideas, I mean, if you're zooming out, you can see that there's just like this pipeline of this kind of these sort of NGO ideas that are just coming from either think tanks in the United States or in the Anglosphere somewhere.
Well, it's the downside of a high trust society is that it's a high trust society, right?
Very much yes. True. One thing I wanted to bring up earlier, which is something that I think goes to show with why there needs to be a focus still on things like self-improvement and holding true to yourself, is that a lot of work has been done to understand, you know, specifically around the sphere evolving AA, that the substance of an ideology on its own is very much useless.
Yes.
That ideas are only as good as the organizations and the power structures behind them. And that as much as we enjoy talking about our ideas, and we should still continue to do so, there needs to be a continuing draw of focus away from just the ideas in a vacuum or how we apply ideas to the world, because we need to first have the organization.
Well, that's why I've got a, one of the pieces I always use as a jumping off point when we talk about serious action, what we do, is your speech from Nomos, Birmingham, which is, what is the vanguard? It's this idea that once we've created a community of people, once there's a group of people that we've got together, you know, you start getting people out of it who, like ourselves, are content creators or people who are organizers, people who can do conferences, people can, you know, start bringing it more into the real world and higher level organization, the digital world, and trying to have a mindful approach of progress forward as a vanguard. I think that's one of the things, you know, I called this stream Sanity in an Insane World. It's more of a kind of a basic practical stuff and a way of kind of getting people to think about themselves and each other. And I find that I don't get quote unquote blackpilled by things, or I don't necessarily get as angry about things or start flailing about things, because there is this higher goal in mind of the creation of a community, and out of that community, leaders who can be a vanguard. It sounds lofty,
but no,
and some people did scoff at us when we announced it as a theme for that event. But I thought that all went very well and people came out of it very enthused. And if people have this idea of a much longer time horizon and some relatively lofty goals, but that have incremental steps upwards, I think that's a great way to keep people sane as all these different news stories swirl around.
Yeah, I think especially in the online world, people's quote-unquote good ideas do a lot of heavy lifting for what are otherwise ineffectual, or actually people who would leave your movement worse off.
Yeah.
Because they become so hung up on the ideas on their own that they basically cut off their own nose to spite their face, because the aesthetic of what the movement has to look like or who has to be its contents or what specifically it has to be orientated to always come first to them, as opposed to building the thing first and then molding it to the purpose.
Well, I mean, it's fantasy football, right?
Yeah.
we're gonna have to move from doing fantasy football to actually maybe playing in one of the lower leagues. But
you've got to get the team together first.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, so much of the effort that's put into the media currently is just to keep people spinning in their wheels in some type of like hyper-real simulation reality where they feel like they're doing something. You know, like the baby, you know, sitting behind, like in the intro to The Simpsons, where the baby sitting next to Marge, like with the play wheel. I feel like that's where most people are, if they're completely honest with themselves. And there is, you know, with the blackpilling, there's a certain grief process that's always related to accepting reality, like getting a cancer diagnosis or something. That's almost how I feel like going through taking a lot of these pills, because it's like you realize how much work has to be done and how much effort it actually takes. And like you go through this sort of, you know, shock stage, kind of denial stage, anger stage, you know, bargaining stage. And then you can just kind of accept reality and try to see, okay, what can we actually do here? You know, what is actually possible? Like this tiny little wiggle room that we have, what can we put in there? You know, can we just move it an inch forward and not just go back into the delusion?
Sorry, I think that's something that I've found interesting about, you know, reading perennialists and uber black pillars like Evola and Spengler. Despite, you know, Spengler writing, you know, massive volumes of the biggest black pill you can probably put to paper, I never get the sense from his writing that he has given up on it, if that makes sense.
No, of course, because he would never write the book in the first place.
Yeah, I always
come right back to the quote that I used in the very first Nomos speech.
Yeah,
from Julius Evola, where he's talking about how, you know, traditional civilizations consumed space and, oh, sorry, is it time and modern civilizations consume space and energy.
Yeah.
And if we are to be a vanguard for traditional ideas, then we ourselves must be orientated around the notion of permanence. And that's why, for me, it's, you know, the long-term goals are not winning politically or even having something like a party established. The long-term goal is just making sure that what we have now exists through the next 15, 20, 30, 40 years, that the canon of texts we are interested in, the network we put together through Nomos, through Maven and other people's work at Shieldings, that survives.
I agree. I mean, you can go back, you know, 30 years and a lot of the texts that we are reading today probably weren't even accessible, right? So keeping that alive is very important now that, you know, the age of information makes it easy enough to at least gather the information. For now, we should try to keep it alive.
I think the biggest white pill for people should be that we're still here.
Mm.
Like, we're still here, we're still able to build things, we're still able to do things like Shieldings and Nomos. Things haven't become so locked down that you can't just go out and talk to people about things. I remember you had a very infuriating discussion with somebody on Telegram who basically said you can't just go out there and talk about like the EDL to people because like Jonathan Breenblatt will actually break into your house and steal all your silverware.
Well, he was annoyed because I was suggesting to him that it wasn't so much that the JQ was the issue. It's that talking about the JQ online makes you look like an unsociable weirdo. But if you go down...
Yeah, opening, like going to a pub and like opening with a JQ makes you an even more unsociable weirdo. Well, and this is a big thing that we have to deal with, is to, you know, find the people who aren't unsociable weirdos and get them into positions where they can convince other people.
But it was more the idea that when I suggested to him that maybe you should stop doing it online and go to the pub and talk to people sincerely about these ideas, which if you go and do it, I mean, at least in my experience, I know your experience as well, there's actually a lot of receptive people out there, not just specifically to things like MudJQ. You obviously don't start with that.
We're more talking about the idea of just going out and putting forward yourself in a normal manner.
And don't be terrified.
Yeah, don't be terrified of speaking out about things, about speaking out about you know, powerful NGOs and things like that. Because most people know.
Doing that, when all you have to go on is sort of the backing of some weird guy on Twitter who tells you that, you know, you should only eat a certain kind of meat, it doesn't really work because you don't have the confidence in the sense that you have a real life community backing you up, right?
Yes, of course.
When you have actual people that you know, that you've shook their hand, that you know their ideas about these things are sound and you agree with them, it's a lot easier to stand your ground.
Yeah. It's why people from our side can't go out and just be activists.
No.
Because we don't have the support network. We don't have large amounts of the regime essentially waiting in line to support us in case we do fall foul of some sort of social ill because of the activism you're engaging in.
Yeah, people have to be able to, like, people have to look out for each other and look after each other and be, you know, relatively cautious and careful in some ways, but it is more of just a way of seeping in, as it were, rather than like going out, carrying placards, carrying signs, things like that. You can't just be a mirror image of the rabid leftist activist because you just end up with a destroyed life or completely burned out.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, leftist strategies will work for us. You can't just move into a crack house and go threaten anybody who you think is a mid-century German imitator or something. And I mean, it just won't work. You have so many of these kind of bio-Leninist lefties, right, who live these sort of extremely destructive lifestyles. And I mean, if you doubt that, you can just go into some of these like spaces, whether it's Twitter spaces or Facebook groups that they have, and ask yourself if you think that these people are mentally healthy. And I mean, what they're doing is to some degree effective for them. They are able to a degree, organize, spend a lot of their time and focus on hurting their enemy, right, and just intimidating people out of speaking, and, you know, canceling people, just calling workplaces and so on. But these strategies are not available for us. Not in a single instance that I can think of, at least not with the chessboard being the way it is now.
I think there is some wider discussion that would actually open some people's eyes up to how easy that is, because that's something we've game theoried on some stuff before, and it's really not that difficult. However, I think it would be best if any discussion of that was kept out of the public eye.
You also need people who have, like, you need the legal backing to do that. If you're going to do something that is ostensibly quote-unquote gay ops, you need something to bail you out. When we did the NOMOS event in London, my speech was about the very, very basic stuff about, you know, monetary resources, legal resources, having some organizational resources, and then being able to do practical stuff. And here's a hypothetical question. Like, let's say I'm like Peter Thiel, and I come and I go, hello, Longhouse people. I would like to give you like $50,000. Like, what would you guys do? Like, in terms of like the distant stuff, the central sensible centrism stuff, or whatever you call it. Like, how far would like $50,000 go with you guys? Like, what would you do if Mr. Musk or Mr. Thiel actually walked up and was like, here's a bunch of money, go do stuff.
Well, I could probably try to answer it first. The problem that I've noted is that there's like a very large disparity between like a sort of middle class income and what you can do on a middle class income, and then having like this sort of Soros money in a sense.
Yeah.
And there's such a wide gap between there. Like, say if I were to do something, like we talked about self-help, and we keep coming back to that. And I say, let's say I did some type of investment or I put in a lot more time at work, or I got a job where I was able to double my income. Okay, I have twice as much money as like a regular middle class person in my neighborhood. Well, I'm still pretty much politically useless with that money, right? So, yes, if you're going to have any money that's going to be able to impact things on a very large systemic scale, like, you need this kind of like top 1% hedge fund liquid money. But to answer the question a little bit more, like, if I had that kind of money, it would be like putting together some kind of NGO infrastructure, basically, of really, really
community centers.
Yes, like, yep. Sort of innocuous NGOs that's sort of based on an analysis of, okay, you look at the demographics that are helpful to us in different ways, and okay, well, what do we need for that? You could have various NGOs that would provide legal help to, for instance, let's say like blue collar people, like bus drivers, for instance, who lose their job over some wearing a cross, for instance, to work, something like that, that they would get the proper legal help to get back to work and to continue making an income, and to having enough of a legal infrastructure to make sure that it's, canceling people would not be as easy as it currently is against people of our persuasions.
I have to admit, I think you've possibly got the issue of scale a bit wrong there. Now, you're saying that, if I had an upper middle class income, I would still be unable to help. That's, of course, because of the division of labour. I mean, that's frankly why folk like me exist, because I'm, to some extent, willing to put aside any notion of a career so that I can commit time to doing this sort of thing. But the other side of the coin as well is that you don't need the Soros money. As we've learned from doing the NOMOS events, if someone could, say, come to us, or two or three patrons come to us and give us small, very small four-figure sums, we could do so much more with NOMOS. It's about having small amounts of liquid capital. I mean, £50,000, just as a number put out there in the abstract, would be able to provide us with an unbelievable amount of resources. We could invest in all sorts of AV stuff. We could actually invest in something like a van to take everything around in. We could actually then put money forward into something like a merch sort of site and page all the stock for that, so that you can sort of not have to worry about the overheads. You can even get into the sort of notions of whether or not you would want a full-time premises. I mean, for that kind of money, if you knew that you were going to get that regularly, you could look at renting out quite a sizable premises to be used almost in the way that Alexander Adams has talked about at NOMOS, like a salon, a permanent space for creatives in our sphere to actually be able to do things, have resources there, be that books, materials, connections, access to further capital. So it is all there. It's just we've got to be realistic and think small.
Well, that's why I said community centers and gyms.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
If with that kind of money, that's what I would do. I would create excuses for people like us to hang out.
You should go the Muslim community center route. There's enough of them over
here. Yeah, if I had more money, I'd do different things. But with that kind of money, that's what I'd do.
No, but I'm just sort of putting forward the notion that it doesn't need to be on the, you know, as you said, Soros scale, as it were.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. You're putting them forward. I like the ideas. I'm just thinking that a lot of them, I'm not sure, like sort of the marginal utility of, say, let's say like a merch store, for instance. I'm not trying to be a contrarian or anything, but just sort of in my view, like it's really nice to have like a place to stay and so on. But sometimes I think about like, okay, the marginal utility of these things. Where, I mean, this is something that you could have probably done, like, you don't even need liquid capital. I assume there are people, you know, in the spheres who would be willing to lend out, for example, like they have an extra car, they would be able to lend out space for a specific amount of time and so on.
But that's why then these things become, they're not certainties at that point, which is half the issue.
I'd ask Mr. Walrus what his answer would be then, if he was given some kind of large resource by an outside actor, where that'd be put.
Are we talking the Soros money?
Yeah, basically, if Mr. Musk and it wasn't a scam, or Mr. Theo came down and went, here you go, here's 50,000 euros, Mr. Walrus.
We're still talking 50,000.
Right? Oh yeah, yeah.
That was pretty much my answer.
Oh, sorry. Right.
With more money, I'd set up, basically counter forces in terms of charities or NGOs to be able to push back. Now, that would be specifically for my country, because that's where we're at right now, where the NGOs wield a huge amount of power over the bureaucracy. Now, if that's the case 5 years from now, maybe I'd do something different, right?
Okay, so I think I'm getting mixed up with who answered there. Has everyone answered, or have I just gone crazy now?
I think
everybody's answered.
Mutually not exclusive.
Oh no, I've gone both and say no. I was getting mixed up. But it's something we've thought about, and we kind of, it's something that's fun to theory craft. But I do think both your answers are pretty good, and that it is kind of about having these spaces and having that breathing room, and it as much as it's kind of a distant possibility, as far as we can't really have like professional activists, I believe we at some point should have like professional organizers, at least, or at least people in the background who are able to draw like a proper income and have breathing room. Because, you know, Evelyn does this quite time intensive stuff, because she's able to because I have, you know, a decent job, but I do work quite a lot, and I do this in my spare time, and I always think about how much more I'd be able to get done if I was doing this, you know, professionally. But it's not possible, and it's, in many ways, it is better to have an outside income currently, because of how quickly you can get nixed from the internet. I wouldn't actually want to rely on that internet money. In fact, I've seen that stuff weaponized against so many people in the past that I sometimes don't think that's advisable. But an outside organization with resources is a tantalizing thing to think about. It's something that I always think that people should be moving towards.
But I have a follow-up question when it comes to like the Thiel money, and that's sort of the question of criterias and, you know, what you call KPIs in the corporate world, you know, performance indicators. Like, how do you measure results? Because typically, like, investors like that, they're not just willing to part with the money. And I think it's the same with like the Open Society Foundation there. It's important to them to sort of measure how is the success, what does it look like? If I've given you the 50,000 pounds, what does that mean in terms of real world results? What can be presented, say, from having the hangout place or the van or so on?
Well, I think from looking at some of, let's say, the Sorosphere stuff, that I don't think they really have too much of a bother around that. They're pretty happy to fire hose money at stuff for a reasonable period of time, see what happens, and then if there's no you know, results from that, then they'll just move on to the next one. I mean, that seems to be what Thiel and his sorts do. Maybe not to the same scale, but at least to some degree.
I do get what you're saying, though, about that it's the other side of the margin, in that even in this miracle scenario, there might still be strings, and there will still be strings to that money. And that, you know, as we go about building things ourselves, it is the safest way to do it. That's why we do the Nomos stuff. Shill, 27th of May in Manchester. That's why we do the Nomos stuff under our own power as much as possible and try and do as much as we can ourselves. In that, I always try and impress upon people, you know, no one is coming to save you, but not in like a super depressive way, but it's just like, look, you can't just sit around waiting for somebody to reach down. You can do stuff. I always get very frustrated with people because you guys have quite a practical outlook. You guys are able to properly pass, like, right, things can be done. But there's a lot of people who have quite literally said to me, like, I don't see what can be done, like, in those terms. And I always find that it's like, you know, the worse things get, the more you can do rather than the less you can do. And that's what I always try to impress on people. It's like, look, if you see something you think you can even just inform someone about or contribute to or help someone with, or even small things add up if quite a lot of people are doing them. And it is something I try to impress upon people, is that do not feel hopeless. There are always things you can be doing. And if you feel like you could be doing more, doing more sometimes comes with more obligations and more strings. And, you know, people need to walk before they can run. So I get what you, the problem would be that a lot of the way we measure things needs to change. And that a lot of people will be looking for
With the Thiel money, with the 50,000, my immediate, sort of KPI, as you call it, Lodic Path, would be the first, assuming this is, you know, I talked about setting up like community centers or whatever, hangouts, but the reason that you do the hangouts is to be able to organize into some form of political action. And my first political action would be to, right down the street from where I live, there is a kindergarten. The listeners of Longhouse will have heard me mention this multiple times. Two, three times a year, that kindergarten flies a pride flag. Now, I don't have a child in that kindergarten. I don't know what's going on, but I want it gone. That would be my first goal. Whatever needs to happen, if I need to campaign alongside, me and my boys need to campaign alongside the radical Christian guys in our town. If we need to, you know, get the newspapers involved, whatever it requires, you know, we would start putting pressure on people's minds as to where this comes from, because this just shows up one day. This comes from an NGO that's advising some bureaucratic decision somewhere in sort of the machine of government, and now your kid is learning about trans people at age of 3, right? No one questions it. So the first step is getting you know, people to question it. That with 50,000 pounds, I could probably do that, right?
I think there's a lot of, I don't know, symbolic victory in that, but it's I'd probably put it towards,
I know it doesn't do anything, but for me, you know, locally, when I send my kids in the future to kindergarten, they're not gonna get the pride stuff.
Well, that's kind of what I meant earlier on about being hung up on the ideas and the aesthetics to some extent, because as you recognize there, it makes you feel better knowing that
I have eliminated a source of rot in my local community.
But the same people would probably still be teaching there. The same NGO that has put that flag there would still be in your country. So functionally, things haven't really changed.
It might be a good like vector jumping off point of going like, right, where is this?
I'm talking
from?
About the first step.
Of course, in
a multi-step campaign, pretty much.
I think that it's a good thing that people need to start thinking more about the local areas as well. People need to deglobalize their mind in some way, and be able to look kind of in their immediate environment with the people around them, the people that they know and are able to shake hands with, and invest their time more wisely rather than you talked about. I wrote an article called Armchair Generals, and that's what a lot of people sometimes feel like. They're moving around these invisible divisions in their head. Have you guys ever done any kind of like meetup stuff, or is that quite difficult where you are in like Nordic and...
It is difficult. and we haven't been doing this long enough to have a consistent enough audience, but it's something that we're working on. We're working with other Scandis and maybe even some Germans to set up, you know, similar events as Nomos or even Shieldings.
Yeah, that's been one of the interesting parts about the Longhouse, isn't it? We put it up just to be a kind of Scandinavian DR stream, but we seem to be attracting just everybody else. Like, we have a lot of American viewers that are regulars and the Anglo UK viewers and so on. And I mean, we have now Pajits, right? People from India now that are viewing the show for some reason, and based white supremacists from Palo Alto. So,
correct me if I'm wrong here, would that be possibly because your show is in English?
That's part of. I mean, it's part of the strategy in a certain sense, and in the marketing, we decided to do it in English just to reach more people. So, I'm not lamenting that the people who are watching us are in Scandinavian. You know, that's my fault for doing it in English.
No, I'm just wondering, you know, then again, thinking of your, you know, what do you do with £50,000? Maybe you engage in, you know, specific content based off of the things you've already made so that there's not too much effort really needs to be applied. You could fire hose a lot of it out, and then all you're really doing is paying for translation or paying for your time re-recording it in another language.
I think it's important as well, because you guys represent a kind of a bridge between places. Because I imagine there's quite a lot of stuff we never hear about because it isn't in English.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think that this is actually a very important part, because what we can do, being connected to this larger, both American and Anglo network, is that we can connect with local organizations that are similarly minded within the Scandinavic areas and try to basically be, like you said, a sort of bridge between them and find ways to coordinate that way. And I mean, on the Scandinavic point, I mean, I'm absolutely not sorry about having an English audience at all. Quite frankly, I just think it's a sort of problem with the mindset of a lot of the what you'd consider like right-wing leaning people in Scandinavia. Distributist has sort of been a big guy for me getting into this scene. I think he was like the first exposure I had through Sargon, right? And he had a stream with one of these guys from Netherlands. Well, I don't remember his name exactly, but they were talking about like the problem of like the European petty nationalism, right? Which is, I mean, it's a huge problem in my view, this sort of very parochial kind of petty nationalism within the spheres. Especially I see it here in Norway with every party that's sort of, you know, to the right of the Overton window. I mean, if they were able to actually implement the policies that they were suggesting, Norway would turn into a kind of Ukraine, right? It would just be a sort of like North Korea. They have like this complete third worldist approach where they just want to sort of close off everything and they only want to talk to people inside of their own spheres. But this is the losing strategy. You know, even though we're going into deglobalization, as people are saying, like, we need to have the global networks. I think that's one of the reasons that the progressives have been so successful, is that the one is the technophilia and the other is the emphasis on like global communication between progressives and between sort of like-minded left-oriented peoples.
Yes, they've been able to
leverage that.
They've been able to bulldoze local communities and local problems with global money and kind of global solution stuff. And you're right, in order to get where we want, if you have one state, say if Norway decided to become Le ethno state, it became a Le based ideal state, it would immediately be invaded by the United States.
We already are, so it wouldn't. Yeah. They wouldn't even have to invade. They could just
roll Russia,
on
right?
NATO bases. Yeah,
that's why.
Or
Russia. Why I said it's going to be the new Ukraine, because we're neighboring to Russia. So it's like, okay, we become like Le based third world country. Okay, let the Russian tanks come in, and then the United States send their airplanes. It would just be a disaster. I understand the sentiment that's coming from these people. They're angry that, you know, their communities have been brain drained. All these local communities have been destroyed. Trust is destroyed. You know, masculinity is destroyed. Tradition is gone. I totally get it. But the solution is not going to be like this sort of old school. We're just going to close off the community to all of the rest of the world, and we're not going to engage in trade or cooperation, or we're not going to use technology and that kind of stuff. You're just making yourself a target, right? Because you live on land that is valuable. Like, there's a lot of valuable resources inside of the Norwegian borders that people want.
The coastline itself is valuable from a strategic point of view. So,
Yeah, you have to realize that there is a sort of geopolitical reality to this, and I think more people are waking up to that after the sort of Ukraine crisis.
It is as well that there's people, that's the discussion for a victory condition. People can talk about looking inwards properly and, you know, exclusively once kind of the boot is off their neck. And we talk about looking locally because that's the easiest place to do things, but you should always be connected because we are such a disparate and atomized group of people. Like I said, I worry that there's a lot of organizations that could be helped, but we can't help them because we don't speak their language. That's something that does concern me, and that's why I like having kind of these bridges between these different nations and different groups, because it is a global war, really. And it's a push and a pull. We've talked about on stream before. We've talked about it in person quite a lot. I've talked about it with certain people at Shieldings and Nomos, is that it is this kind of like weird, we want localism, but we are going to have to do it in a global struggle because it is like a global battlefield.
Yeah, I think I've made that joke to EA before, that to upend the managerial regime requires one instantaneous moment of like sheer managerial brilliance. Yeah. It's the only way it'll ever happen.
I mean, that's sort of what Curtis Yarvin, I think, is all about these days, with this talk of sort of judoing yourself into being the next cool and shaping basically the next managerial class for that moment. How that's going to play out, I'm not sure, but I think that's the same realization.
I will say, I think he is more orientated towards perpetuation than maybe destruction, as we are.
I did enjoy him at Shieldings, though. It was nice to see him. You got to talk to him. I didn't. He always had like orbiters, and I always felt awkward trying to talk to him.
He fell asleep next to me during one of the talks.
I think he was
a bit jet lagged.
Oh dear! I gonna say,
but I got to shake his hand, and
I got to shake his hand as well eventually. But it was just, it's fun. It's fun it being a real community, and I guess you guys can testify to this as well. As we kind of, I don't know, we're not going to finish yet, but kind of the last 15-20 minutes, it's good to be a community. It's good to be around people. It's good to be able to have people on. I remember, God, I've been in this. People consider me like an old fag. I remember talking to Jay Burden, and I felt really old because he was talking about the fact that he was like 13, 14 when like Gamergate started.
He makes me feel old, and he's not that.
Yeah, and people, it's weird having talking to people and then being like, I used to watch you on Sargon stream, or I used to watch you with this person or that person, and you were part of the reason that I ended up looking into these things, and it can be a little uncomfortable sometimes because you feel a bit self-conscious.
You're wondering whether or not it's going to be thank you or it's all your fault.
Yeah, basically. But it is nice to feel part of a community. And a lot of people, the messages I enjoy most are people who are like, look, something was wrong. I could tell something was wrong with the world. You know, your content isn't blackpilling. It's very comforting because at least I can articulate what is wrong now. And that is the big trick with the atomization, is that there's a lot of people who know something is wrong, but they can't quite articulate it, and they don't, and they think they're the only person who notices that. And it's
they can only see it in their little part of the world or their, you know, industry that they're working in, right?
Yes.
But that's again sort of another problem with localism, right? Because if you do go global, in a sense, like you go on the internet and try to find these global communities, you will find so many people who think like you, and you can work with them. But if you sort of stick to this kind of old way of thinking that I'm just going to be in these communities and going to try to find, you know, the neighbor or convince the cousin or whatever about, like, you know, I have these feelings about what's wrong, and then these are my solutions, it's not going to work. I mean, it just isn't, you know.
Well, that's sort of why I'm saying, you know, going with the local, my example of attacking local, you know, pride nodes for me wouldn't really be a victory or anything. It would just be a part of building a community. Now, if I had more money, I would build a bigger community and not do that, and rather just focus on building a new or a counter elite, right? Or a new managerial class.
I think the more powerful things we can do is bring these kind of global resources, like the left do, to a local level, and be able to have small victories by utilizing large networks of people. That's how they do it. You know, there's a classic stuff when people talk about Soros, in that he brings national level funding to like sheriff's elections, local DA elections, local judges' elections, And really, that is how, in a political sense, you take over a country, is you take over the mid-level and kind of high mid-level functionaries.
Finger in every pie.
Yeah, finger in every pie. And that we don't have that many resources now, but it is definitely growing. And I think that people need to have a mindset, you know.
But just you know, imagining or thinking about the potential that, you know, there are lawyers in our spheres that would be willing to help out is so much further along than any of us were 4 years ago.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
So, and once you have these things, you know, little by little, it's a bit of a snowball, right? It's going to build.
Yes, and on the fingers in the pie point, I mean, you said, we don't have the Soros money yet, but there are other things that we can offer, like in terms of competency and training, and like even like what the academic agent is doing, providing sort of more academic resources for people to understand the world in a way that we want them to understand the world, right? And even in these elections, like, we could provide political counseling, for example, on how to do a decent election, or how, you know, people in different bureaucratic positions could function better. And that would be, you know, kind of our sort of self-improvement contribution, in a sense. It's not self-improvement in the sort of, like you talked about, the sort of cringy finance way that you find in every sort of David Goggins YouTube videos, but that we could actually provide help in terms of competence and training for, like, tomorrow's political leaders.
Yeah. I mean, one thing we have considered before, and it's something we aren't necessarily going full bore into because I think it would take way too much of our time at the moment, but taking what are large research projects, turning them into streams that are no more than about an hour and 20 minutes long, and then trying to condense those even further into a Substack post that is no more than 1,000 words. In essence, taking a week's worth of research and turning it into something that looks like a Reuters or an AP release. And I think if we were to really think seriously about how do we get so many of our people to move kind of in essentially lockstep with the same principles and the same ideas and the same research, that would probably be the easiest way to really go about it.
Yeah, I think having coordinated narratives, again, it's, we can't just be leftists, but we can look at what they do that's effective and adapt some of it to us without falling into the pitfalls that they do and realizing we are not in power. I think having, where possible, like, I remember Carlisle Week and things like that were extremely successful, and people remember them and talk about them because it was people acting like an organized minority for once.
Yes.
And I think that'd be a great thing for people to see as well, to have this idea of, you know, some direction rather than just empty noise.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the having no resources thing is a double-edged sword, because when the left has the fire hose of money that they have, so much of it tends to get wasted.
Yes.
Whereas we have to become very shrewd users of our resources, which is how Nomos has come out, really.
Yeah.
And that we realise that if you go about it in just the right fashion, you can turn community events that are semi-professional into a semi-regular non-profit enterprise. Or at least you could if you had more time than us, I think, to commit to it. But in that same vein, I think there is a lot of things that could be done in our sphere more efficiently and to a much greater degree if only people were willing to sit down and really be shrewd about how they use their resources.
I would say, I don't know, we're coming towards a little bit the end here, but I'll give you guys a bit of time. Like, what would each of you say to people to kind of encourage them to keep people moving forward? Like, what do you think is like the big white pill right now? Where do you see the most ground being gained, or what do you see as kind of the most heartening thing?
Oh, that's a difficult one. Why don't you go first, Ludicpath? I need to think for a moment.
Well, I'm going to repeat the point that you made previously in the stream, Scrump, by the fact that, you know, well, there's more to be done when things are falling apart than if everything is working correctly. I mean, if you would take a time machine back to the 90s and being just peak Fresh Prince mode, and you try to approach people about like Julius Evola or Thomas Carlyle, that would be the most difficult time, I think, to try to pitch any of this to people when everybody's happy. I mean, the fact that everything is falling apart provides so much opportunity for us, and it sounds like a sort of weird thing, but it really isn't when you think about it. Like, when things are falling apart, people are asking for solutions. You know, they're looking to other people to find ways to make things work. And we can be there and provide that and sort of provide a kind of paradigm to think about how to do deglobalization, global deglobalization, or how to exercise politics in the future, in a sense, even though, I mean, it's going to be a hard future. It's like we talked about the population bomb, declining world populations, declining resources, and so on. It's going to be a much more kind of tight-fisted, white-knuckle future where we need different ideas than this sort of abundance mindset, rainbow coalition leftism that we've had for the last 60 years. So I think there's plenty of opportunity for the people who have the energy and the will to sort of come in and provide something.
I'm reminded of one of the only good lines I remember from the Game of Thrones TV series. Littlefinger just saying, chaos is a ladder. I think he's pretty good.
Perfect.
Very good. I think I'll piggyback a bit upon what both of you have been saying here. And rather than talking about sort of a white pill, because I think that for anyone who has the mindset to see it should recognize it. But they should also recognize that it's not going to happen online. As you said, Scrump, the thing we do have is time. The thing we don't have is money. And then it becomes incredibly important for us to decide how we use that time. And spending it on Twitter, you know, is just spinning your wheels, as Ludic Pat said. So any opportunity you have to engage with this community physically is an opportunity you should take if you're serious about this. And if you're not, then you're going to be swept up by whatever, you know, limp-wristed attempt at, you know, putting the woke back into the bottle the regime is going to throw out, and you're not going to be here in 5 years.
Mm. Exactly.
Well, it's heartening. Like I said, you guys have, well, obviously you, Lickpath, you do the Praxarchy thing. Walrus, you do the Longhouse thing with Lickpath. And it's just, you know, we do this and we do our Nomos stuff. There is stuff that you can do and people are doing.
Well, yeah, go to Nomos.
Yeah.
Go to Shieldings. Get involved in your local basket weaving. Get down to the local pub and get to know all the old blokes. You know, and if you've got the time, go become involved in either, I don't know, local council meetings, local community meetings, whatever can be done, not just so that you can go out and change everything, but so you can at least first understand the world around you.
Yes. Is there anything else you guys have to shill before we kind of do our little outro bits?
I want more Twitter followers, but that's it.
Well, no, you don't. It's not worth it.
Yeah, no, it's not worth it. We've got your Twitter in the description. Again, you can find Ludic Pat at Ludic Pat. You can find a walrus at a walrus in a suit. You should go read Praxarchy, and you should go follow a walrus and watch the Longhouse every Thursday at 7. I'm glad we moved our streams because we would clash otherwise. We used to do Thursdays, but
I know we did, and we would notice a dip. when you guys started up, so.
Oh, apologies.
No. Well, yeah, we kind of We've settled into two little slots on Monday and Wednesday that no one seems to use, so we're quite happy. We do try and schedule streams around other.
That's what I did when I started the Longhouse. I looked at sort of the big names when they were streaming, and I just put a time that no one else was streaming in.
We need a sort of Rupert Murdoch character to get us all into ship shape.
Yeah, we do. We need someone to actually organize things properly. But thank you guys for coming. Thank you to all our members who keep us regularly supported. Again, you guys can see more of our videos by interacting with them. Do like, subscribe, and all that cringy YouTube stuff. It does actually work.
Do all the summoning dances in the comments and whatnot.
Click all the links down below. You can join our Telegram. We have a Telegram that's linked down below. My media intern runs my Twitter for legal reasons, although you have been reinstated.
I have indeed. I'm back.
We're back. Do come to Nomos if you're able. Big thank you to both Walrus and Ludic Pat at the Longhouse for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Can I do one last shilling, by the way?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
We're doing the Longhouse again tomorrow, and we're going to have Thomas777 on to sit and discuss we're going to say that like the history of the National Socialist Movement in the US and, you know, everything related to it. So don't miss it.
I've put it in the chat. Press the notify if you want to catch that. So, yeah, that's a nice kind of tomorrow lead in.
Yeah,
so,
no one wants to mess the shaman.
The shaman himself. Anyway, thank you guys for watching and good night.
Good evening.